Hey friends, Bricky here with another Adventures in Design. I'm the host. Maybe you know who I am. Maybe you don't. Maybe this is your first time here, but my name is Bricky. But my question is, who are you? My favorite little vignette inside the Alice in Wonderland dark ride here in sunny Southern California, although it's gray as fuck today. But my favorite little character inside of Alice in Wonderland dark ride, it asks, who are you? And as much as I like it and I enjoy it, I was really thinking about it the other day, right? Like the hardest thing that we do in this world is we figure out who we are as people, what our interests are, what our talents are, how do we maximize our talents? How do we essentially navigate through hopefully like 80 odd years of life, focusing more on who we are and what makes us happy and sort of just shuffling off all the bullshit. And when I did the interview a couple of weeks ago with my friend Biggie, who retired professionally, I made a quote in the middle of the episode that also seemed to resonate with a lot of people that I just said, I just retired from bullshit. Like I just audited my career. I figured out how old I was, where I was going. I'm like, I'm never going to get fucking rich doing this. So let's just cut the shit, the fat off the bone that you don't need, the stuff that's not going to matter on going the long distance and focus on who are you? What do you enjoy? Right? And once you figure out that mystery, and it is a big mystery. I mean, I'm not going to assume that everybody knows exactly, I won't say it again, but who you are professionally, right? Like it takes a minute for it all to click and to figure out what your strong points are, and even longer sometimes to figure out how to maximize or learn how to profit off of whatever your passion may be. But once you get that out of the way, and I'm not saying that it's easy, and I'm not saying that I did it in a year, I might have a couple of years on you, and it took me a while to get to this moment. But once you figure out that mystery of the universe, the part two is who is your customer? Who can support your need of being you, right? For me, it's all about trying to find people that, you know, want to go on this path with me. They like the guests. They like the chicken nuggets. They like all the different people that come to the podcast. But the through line is me. If you don't like me, then fundamentally, we're just not going to get that far. And when I started doing my YouTube channel more full time, it was all about trying to figure out who is the community that believes in the way I'm doing that platform. And it's not easy to figure out who your core customer is. But when you start looking at life, there will be indications on the people that are resonating with you. The comments that you get are the best lead magnets to your future. Because the comments of, oh, I just found your channel, or I just found your podcast, or, you know, somebody over on Instagram, I always love when you put up your sketches, or your photography resonates with me, or I just love the movie you just directed. It's like the comments that people give you when they're just trying to give you an attaboy, if you really break those down and dissect them, there is a lot of data in there. There's a lot of data, a lot of positive reinforcement, and a lot of ways where you can match what your audience is telling you with the way that you're feeling, and where there's a solid overlap, you are starting to find a roadmap to where you should be going. Now, sometimes it's not that easy. I understand that some careers still exist in a vacuum where you don't get positive reinforcement. And trust me, I also get plenty of negative reinforcement. I get a lot of people on YouTube telling me I'm a dumbass. I get a lot of people calling up or emailing, like, I canceled my subscription. You know, I trust me, it's not all praise. But it is sometimes very, very hard to figure out where you're going because not every career lends itself to having the direct customer, the direct consumer of the craft, of the goods that you're making, have a straight line of communication to say, those PVC pipes you hung today, that was some of the best pipe fitting I have ever seen. And by the way, don't even get me started on how well you did your T-joint. I'm just going to guess that a T-joint's a thing. But when you understand who your customers are, and there's another way you can do this. If it's not just people like giving you comments and sort of parsing out what in there resonates with you, the other way of figuring out who your customer are is historically look at who's been paying your bills. What kind of clients are you bringing in? What needs do you seem to be addressing over and over again? Once is lucky, two feels familiar, but three means there's something that's happening. There's a pattern once you can get there. And what today's episode is all about is Jeremy Slagle owns a mom-pa design studio in Columbus, Ohio. Fantastic city that he runs alongside with his wife. But what he realized, or what I should say they realized with SlegelDesign.com, is that statistically, core part of their customers were mid-sized market clients. I am not saying that in a negative way. I know everybody that lives in the middle of the country feels like New York and LA is shitting on you. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. I built my business in Buffalo, New York. I understand the mid-sized market. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. The mid-sized market has much, much different needs than those that are in those bigger tiers. Chicago, Miami, Seattle, Portland. You're going to find bigger clients there that have a whole different way of operating. Not saying that one's better than the other, just saying that it's different. But if you find yourself in a mid-sized market, and there is a different way that that business is conducted. And don't worry, you can still catch the big fish. And Slagle and his crew are well on to catching big fish. In fact, over the pandemic last year, they caught some of their biggest clients ever. But what I believe led to this growth and stepping up into more national clients is how well they were able to serve their core customer, which was the mid-size market client. And why I say this, and what I found to be fascinating about Jeremy as an interview, and I don't think that he was ready for the Bricky sneak attack where you have this whole big, beautiful career, and I just focus in on one thing and just try to dissect it and rip it apart, because it's the one part of you that I find fascinating. And Jeremy does a lot of things really, really well. And I've interviewed lots of people that do those same things really, really well, or maybe even better than Jeremy. But what Jeremy had done better than anyone that I had interviewed before is really boiled down. What does it mean to be a blue-collar, hardworking, ma-and-pa, family-owned design boutique studio in the heartland? And Columbus doesn't get more heartland in America, because it is actually the city where so much stuff is tested, because Columbus, statistically, geographically, it really represents a lot of America. And what I found to be fascinating about what SlegelDesign.com does is they fully understand who their core customer is. They fully understand how they can provide amazing customer service for that client before they've even talked to them on the phone or responded to an email. I'm telling you right now, if you live in a Louisville, Kentucky, if you live in a Columbus, Ohio, if you live in a market similar to that, you need to go to SlegelDesign.com, and he'll hate me for saying this, but you need to study it, because it is a Hall of Fame website on how to create a relationship with your customer before they even know you. Because there's three or four things, all of which we will address in today's episode. Thank you so much for showing up today and hanging out with Jeremy Slagle and myself. But this website takes a lot of the black magic out of design. It does a lot of the explaining that clients that are on limited budgets, and also, most importantly, limited understanding of what buying artwork, buying media, what that is actually like. This website not only holds their hand, but gives them a warm embrace. Shh, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. You think you just need a touch up on your logo, but Slagle Design is going to show you how you actually build a brand, build a business, and from what I can tell, build a friend in the process. Friends, I'm so excited to share with you this website, because this is something that I struggled with, and had only I discovered this website, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I might have never fallen down the dark wormhole, which is podcasting. Who are you? It's Jeremy Slagle on Adventures in Design. Jeremy, welcome to Adventures in Design. How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Look, so I'm looking at your website today, and I'm just going to jump right in. You did something on your website that is so badass. I've never seen this done before. First off, we're going to talk a bit about your website today, because I think your website might be the best design menu I've ever seen. Like, you've really taken a lot of the black magic out of what being an illustrator, graphic designer is, and you've boiled it down into, these are the projects, this is how we do it, and we'll get to all that in a minute, because I really like the way that you made it very informative for people. But the thing that you did that I've never seen done before, and I've looked at a lot of damn websites, is the before and after, right? Like, it's like going into a tattoo shop, and you see that little, like, blurred out cross on somebody's hand, you know, or like, you know, Ricky or Yosemite Sam, and then the guy tattoos something over it that very much improves the human's part on their body. And over on your website, you have this before and after thing. So I'm like looking around at your website and I click on the before and after. I'm like, oh, I've got to talk to this guy. This is absolute legendary that he and Becky are like, look, we're going to show you the before and afters. And I really think that, Jeremy, this is like an outstanding thing to have on your website, because it clearly makes people understand how bad design can be improved and maybe why their logo is bad and why it should be improved. So let's just start here. How did you come up with an idea to put this on your website? And then the next thing is, how do you get clients to be cool with you showing their before and after?
Wow. I'm glad we started here. This is great.
I go straight in for the kill.
What's that?
I go straight in for the kill.
Oh, you did. You did it. You went straight at it. I love it. This is one of the pages on my site that probably gets the most traffic, honestly. And when I get requests for work, it's probably one of the pages that people point out the most. I saw your before and after, and I had to work with you. So the reason is, I work with a lot of small business. That's really my primary focus, to medium business.
Yeah.
Many of whom have already have a logo. They've used it for a few years to get started and such. They had their cousin do it, or they got it on Fiverr or something like
that. Right.
And because they have a great product, they've been successful doing it. And they're at a point now where either they got to go out and get that commercial space, or they're going to start hiring, or they need to start doing something official. So now we got to get uniforms and a sign out front and do a proper website and all that. And so that's when they go, okay, you know, that thing that I had, a brand I had before, got me here.
Yeah.
But I need something that really encapsulates my story moving forward. So I think showing people that whatever you come with, I can work with. In some of the situations, like Cheryl's Cookies, for instance, nationwide cookie chain, they already had a script, but you know, when they contacted me, they were like, that is a free script font that someone bought years ago, and the spacing's not right. The angles of the letters aren't right. It doesn't look custom. What can you do to help us to simplify, clean this up, get rid of the spatula, blah, blah, blah.
And you did one of my favorite design tricks. You differentiated Cheryl's is the brand. Cookies is what Cheryl's does for us. Like, I love when you use different fonts to show a hierarchy of thinking and concept. When I used to be a full-time gig poster designer, I would literally try to look at every piece of information on the poster and be like, how does this have its own unique container, its own unique space, so that it's not typography, it's type that talks to you. You know what I mean? Like, that it's something that's really like going there. So what you did with Cheryl's, instant, as we say now in 2021, glow up.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got to get all the TikTok terms in to stay relevant.
Well, I'm glad you're feeding them to me, because I'm completely irrelevant. So I'll learn something today as well. But you know, even like that, the Backroom Roasters, the one right below that, because I'm looking at your screen as you're doing it. They started in the back room of a bicycle shop, and they kind of got their whole story from the fact that they were roasted in the back room of a bicycle shop. They were delivered their product by bicycle. But well, then what happened was, is the bicycle shop got sold, and the owner moved it to basically an airplane hangar, which is where he was creating, but it was still a shop. It was still where he worked on stuff. It was still done in a shop. So we kind of started to remove, we didn't want to completely remove the story of the bicycle shop from it, but this idea of it's still being roasted in a shop, it still has its roots in a bicycle shop. That we wanted to hold on to certain aspects of the story, but kind of elevate it to something else.
But what you did, Jeremy, which is why I believe that this before and after is something that many people listening are probably going to rip off, and I would agree with them that they should, is that, okay, when you look at the, we're going to look at the backroom, backroom coffee roasters, okay? And you can see this over at slageldesign.com/results. This is where this lives out on his website, because I'm only recording the audio here like a dum-dum. But the bike that they have with the coffee on it, that's obviously a bud, found a photo of a bike, photocopied it. They're using, you know, light blue with brown on it. Great contrast, boys. And it's a bit of a mess. Like, that's going to be hard to put on anything. But then a professional comes in, and you and Beth get it down to the bolt. And inside of the bolt, we have the coffee bean. You took the whole idea, the whole story, and you put it down into one micro thought that can be put on hats, can become an enamel pin, can become embroidered on polos or on whatever they want. And this shows guy who accidentally started a pizzeria that got a little bit too successful, has extra cash in his pocket, is looking to grow his business and burn some money, be like, oh, this is why you hire a pro. And that's why I love this before and after. Just like when you go into the tattoo shop, like, oh, I don't have to walk around with this horrible, you know, three girlfriends ago name on my arm. Like, I can have like a cool skull on my arm, or, you know, a cool Ozzy Osbourne tattoo that I've been wanting forever. Like, I just don't think a lot of people understand how stuck they are. But what you have done is, once again, and this is why you've got a great website and a great approach, you've taken a lot of the black magic out of the graphic arts by actually showing people the steps and how you can go from A to B. And when I saw this on your website, I'm like, why doesn't everybody do this? This is great.
Well, now you're telling everybody, so everyone is going to do it. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
But hey, that's great.
It was my one thing, Mark.
It was my competitive edge, Bricky, and you gave it away.
Oh, my whole world is going to collapse around me now.
But no, I love this, and I understand, like, you know, you're in Columbus, Ohio. I spent a lot of my design years in Louisville, Kentucky, and Buffalo, New York, so similar size markets. And you do get a lot of, you know, mom-pa people that are organically growing businesses. You know, they've got a team of less than 50, and you're talking to the person that, you know, not too long ago was, you know, hanging sheetrock and trying to build this secondary business, and the business took off. Like, I understand a lot of sort of the type of clients you get. And I think that this website is really good for somebody in your situation, because getting over to the menu aspect of it is that not only do you break down what your services are, but you also give people examples like, oh, so you want to see that we do logos? Here's logos that we've done in certain genres, to give people an idea of like, so you looking for a sandwich? Here's our paninis. Here's our Italian subs. Like, you keep going deeper in, which, once again, most people don't go into that level of customer service.
Yeah, I've built this site in Squarespace. I love Perfect. Squarespace. It's like, I'm not a developer by any means. This was one of those things where I had to throw a website up relatively quickly when I found out I needed to go out and start my own thing. And Squarespace, I had some experience with it, and it's been fantastic to work with. I love it. It's simple. I mean, I always encourage designers who can't figure out what to do with their website to at least get something on the internet.
Just you
get
have
something
to.
On the internet.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this goes to show, like, okay, so you did it on Squarespace. My websites are on Squarespace as well. You're looking to work for other people. You're not looking to build like the most interactive website. Like, what you've done is you've created a menu. And when we get down to the bottom footer of the homepage of his website, you know, he has it divided up into brand identity, print and packaging, digital, illustration. But what I love about this is, if you go underneath illustration, you have editorial, book illustrations, infographics, and icons. Sort of then again, sub-branding what it is that you do. Because I know a lot of people that listen, they've taken their career and they've just focused in onto a pen's point of, this is exactly what I do. You know, I am an illustrator that just does this one genre, take it or leave it. That's who I am. But you and Beth are going more from the, you know, boutique agency, more affordable, more friendly level of design. You know, there's not a big sign out front that says this guy and jerk off, right? So it's already more affordable, easier to go for. And so you're taking, hey, who are our customers? They're people that don't buy a lot of media. They're people that haven't done this at a professional level. Let's get as much information to them in this courting process so that when they actually come to us, they're now somewhat of an informed customer, so that you two don't have to reinvent the wheel every phone call, every conversation, every project. Like, I get what you're doing here.
Yeah, it's important for us, especially those of us that work with small businesses, local businesses, to educate people as to what they need.
Like,
I would say almost every call or email I get is specifically like, I need a logo. And so I usually back up. And one of my first questions is, do you need a logo or do you need help with your brand identity?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? There you go.
And people just kind of like take a minute and they think about it and they're like, well, aren't those the same thing? It's like, no, they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
And so you take the time to lovingly, you know, walk somebody through it. Don't make any assumptions that someone's done this before.
Yeah.
I'm not working with people that have worked in marketing agencies or ad agencies. I can't use the lingo that they use. So it really does need to be something that you boil it down to something that's approachable and easy to digest.
And that is such a smart move in that you're essentially making it easy for them to tell you what they want. Because everybody listening knows, if you've ever worked on a creative project, 9 times out of 10, just throw the first round right out the window. Because the first round is when they go, oh, when I said I wanted something funky, I didn't want something this funky. You know what I mean? Like, and I hate the word funky. I use it all the time because it's just like, don't tell me you want something. Oh, we come to you because your work's funky. I'm like, that makes it sound like my work has a fungus growing in it. And then I'm like some sort of parasite that's going to ruin your business. But Jeremy, you know, so many times when you're speaking with somebody, because, you know, we're working with Nike. Whoever Nike has buy in media, they've worked in the industry for a while. They were probably a designer at one point. Like, they can speak the language. They can go over to LinkedIn Design. They can say, hey, it's the Olympics. You know, we got an okay Nike budget. We're trying to get some patches done. We need it by this date. They can speak the lingo. When you're working with smaller local businesses that are evolving, you're just not going to have that information right out of the way. So when you come over to Jeremy's website, he takes the whole, once again, this guy is like David Copperfield's worst enemy. He's like, hey, everybody, there's a big mirror over here. And that's why you can't see the Statue of Liberty, you bunch of dum-dums. So when you go over to his website, he takes the creative process and he breaks it down into 3 steps. Gain traction, get up to speed, equip for the long haul. And really, as somebody who's done this, you know, a lot and has studied other people doing this, you've really taken a big thing and you've broke it down into 3 small steps. And the best thing you can do for any entrepreneur is say, hey, don't worry, baby. I know you're all stressed out trying to build this business. Let Jeremy take care of it for you. Let's roll the slag away. And you're literally just saying it could be easy as 3 small steps. And that takes so much anxiety out of the process of, well, what is this going to cost? What if I don't like what you do? What if you don't understand who I am? You know, do I have to pay for it? Is there licensing? Do I have to pay for it every time I use it? Like, with your 3 small steps, you're taking a lot of voices in their head and you're just going, shh, don't worry, girl. Slagle's got you over here. Am I right?
I guess so. I never thought of it quite that way, but sure. Yeah, I can roll with that.
So let's go to gain traction. Okay. So right out of the gate, and this is another thing that they do really, really well over at Slagle, is they not only give you a description of kind of what step one is, but they also say what to expect. And I think what to expect, Jeremy, might be more important than the paragraph above it, just because it gives people an idea of, okay, I got an email back from the guy. And I'm just making up numbers. I have no idea what his pricing is. But, you know, Jeremy sends them over $5,000. And they're already going, whoa, thought this would be more like $500. Because I've worked in this genre before. And so with explaining to them what they're going to get each time and then saying what to expect, you're now walking them through the process to be like, oh, okay, I'm not going to give Jeremy $5,000. And then he's going to give me back one thing and I have to love it for the rest of my life. There's a process here. There's a negotiation. It's a back and forth. And you giving them what I always refer to as a script for success is going to take out a lot of that anxiety on somebody who hasn't bought media before.
Yeah, especially people that have gone the Fiverr route in the past. You know, I get that a lot. And if somebody's only experience with a designer for having a logo or brand identity done is Fiverr or some online place where they just throw crap at you until something sticks and hopefully something sticks.
Yeah.
Helping them just kind of unlearn that. Okay, so why does this cost so much more? Why does this take so much longer?
Yeah.
Because we because you're calling us because you didn't have a good experience or result with the other thing. So we're going to actually get to know you. We're not going to outsource this to someone, some faceless person you've never met before. And we're certainly not going to make this a competition for people who are likely to get screwed out of the fact that they didn't win the bid.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a, again, it just goes back to that opportunity to educate and help people understand why we do things the way we do them. And that's kind of the whole concept behind Always in Tandem.
Right.
Some buddies of mine, I don't know if you know Dylan Mengus, who's another designer here in Columbus. We did a bicycle ride that was 105 miles from Columbus to Portsmouth, Ohio, on a Saturday. And then it was 105 back the next day. It was grueling. It was fun. We did it a couple times, but, on the ride, you know, the only people that would pass us on a regular basis were people on tandems. And I started thinking about that and I was like, okay, if you're on like these sweet road tandems that cost like way more than I could ever afford, and you've got two people, but two wheels, it's like a V8 in a car versus a four cylinder in a car. So this idea that, you know, you just send something off into the ether and somebody's going to throw logos back at you, that's not a tandem.
Right.
How do we use this idea to say, we're going to hop on the bike with you, and because we're going to be together on this, we can take this, your dreams, your brand, your messaging so much farther than if I just went off and did my thing and came back. So a lot of this about what to expect is to help them understand it's going to be very collaborative. And if you are calling me because you just expect me to do some magic without your help, I'm not a good match for your project.
Yeah, I get that. Hey friends, I want to tell you about my friends over at GarmCompany.com. GarmCompany.com is a graphic artist resource material that you need for your next project. It's all curated and created by my friend Emir over at Forefathers, who a little bit of a maniac, but that's good because his insanity has made him focus on the details of what it means to be a phenomenal typographer and a phenomenal illustrator for logos and branding. Emir works really, really hard on creating things that you can't find anywhere else. And they're all designed fundamentally with the idea of, this is something that I wish that I had to make my creative process move faster. And he's making that move faster and faster for you. It's GarmCompany.com. Site-wide discount is AID. And I don't know if it's live yet or not, but he's been working on this halftone brush. Nobody else has one like it. If you're looking to get really nice stylized halftones in your illustration work, this brush is phenomenal. If it's not there yet, it will be soon. And if it's already there, you're welcome. You'll love this thing. GarmCompany.com. Coupon code site-wide. AID. When you support our sponsors, you support our content. I live blocks from the beach, humble brag, and there's a lot of bikes everywhere. And I had this thought the other day when I was at a red light waiting for the you know, traffic to clear. I was like, you know, I always see these people on tandem bikes, and they always seem to be the slower bikes. Why isn't the tandem bike twice as fast as all the other bikes? Like, I was sitting there literally having this thought in my mind. I'm like, hey, you idiot should be going twice as fast as this guy because there's two of you. What are you doing wrong over there?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you put someone on a tandem beach cruiser versus someone else on a beach cruiser and you had them race, the tandem will win every time.
Dude, I love this. I love John Henry against the steel driving machine. Like, I would love to see this happening.
Yeah. It's just the way, I mean, you know, especially on these long road rides, like, these are people that are, and they look like they're just having so much fun. I'm sitting there, you know, killing myself for 105 miles and they just go by with a big smile on their face because it's truly a lot less effort to move those two wheels on a tandem than it is on one person.
I love when I will take a run on the beach and I'm like huffing and puffing and I got, you know, something in my headphones. It's like super inspirational, you know, and I'm like, I'm just like running against the world. And then like, you know, two moms in their like, you know, late 40s will run by and they're having a conversation. They're like, and then the kids told me that they don't want to go to Yaya's on Friday night. And I'm like, no, we do this on Friday nights because Saturdays, your dad and I like, and I'm like, how are they having a conversation and just like running past me at this pace and talking? Like, I will be riding the Peloton and Beth will be like, what do you want to have for dinner? And I'm like, no, I'm writing the book. Like, it's the least time I want to talk to anybody. And they're just full on having a conversation. You've mentioned this a couple of times before we get back into your three-step process here. I'm curious about this because this is something I would start becoming a full-time podcaster in 2014. But in 2009, when the economy melted down, I said, fuck clients. And I don't want to work for people anymore. I want to go full on customer products. I want to remove the client process out of this. So my wife and I, Beth, ironically, we had a really good run of 5 years of being client free. And then we both got into becoming full-time content creators. So we really dipped out when that new bottom of like Fiverr was just kind of out on the horizon, right? Like it was out on the horizon. And back then you could get 10 designers in a room and all 10 of them would be like, yeah, screw that. That's not good. And now you get 10 designers in a room. There's a couple, well, actually it's not the worst thing ever. I get jobs off of Fiverr. And so like now they have a commercial in the Super Bowl. Like I still see it as a bad thing. I see it as the bottom of the bottom and the lowest of the low. But you're actually on the front lines fighting the fight. Where is that at now? Like, how bad has that affected somebody like your business that is trained professional with a well-rounded body of work? You have a family-run business and you're trying to build it for an honest wage for honest work. Like, how bad has Fiverr fucked things up for folks like you guys?
Okay. So, I don't know if you edit this at all, but
nope.
My wife's name is Becky.
Becky, I've been calling her Beth the whole time.
It's okay. So sometimes she goes by Beck.
Okay.
So I thought maybe that's where you were going. I thought maybe you knew her well enough to call her Beck.
I do not know her well enough to call her anything other than your wife. So Becky,
it's all right. I want to make sure credit is given where credit is due.
Oh, that would make me mad. I would have fought me right out of the gate. So you're a nicer guy than I am.
She's amazing. So, you know, I'll be honest. I think there is a place for different things.
Okay.
I hate Fiverr, not necessarily because they do cheap logos as much as I hate the model of making people compete for something that you don't ever get paid for. I think that's my biggest issue with it. I think this idea that, you know, educating and telling people that the best solution always comes when you've got five designers throwing 18 different ideas at you and surely one of them's going to be fine.
Right.
When you'd be way better off, you know, finding one person you trust or one company that you trust and allowing them to do a deep enough dive to get to know you that they come up with something truly unique. Otherwise, you know, so I have people that call me oftentimes and a lot of them will say, well, $10,000 for a logo. I mean, I just was looking around on the internet and I found, you know, I could get logos for $500.
Right.
And I just say, you can do that.
Right.
I mean, it's clearly an option. But let me just explain a little bit about what it is. Chances are you're probably not going to be able to trademark it. A lot of the stuff that's out there on these crowdsourced websites are kind of regurgitated logos.
See, that's a good point, fine, though. Like, you're already breaking down to them. Like, look, you can't trademark it because it's probably clip art from something else, a font that's free off the shelf that everybody else has. Like, I love that you're already building a case of like why it costs 500 and why you cost 10 grand.
Yeah. And what I tell people, I also tell them like, listen, let's say you're going to pay $500 for something.
Yeah.
Most of this work is being outsourced. Some of it's in the US, a lot of it's international. And let's say you've got, you know, multiple designers and they're all vying for this work and only one of them's actually going to get paid for it. It seems unethical to me
for sure
to have a bunch of people do a bunch of work and only one of them get paid for it. Or, you know, I just have a problem with that. And so sometimes people walk away from it and they go, cool, I hear you. Sounds to me like you're trying to talk me into working with you. And that's fine if that's how they feel. But, I will say 1 year, I basically said, you know, that's, for someone in your situation, that's a perfectly viable option if that's where you want to go, but you're not going to get anything unique and they're not going to spend any time getting to know you or getting to be able to tell your unique story. I had three different clients that contacted me. They spent multiples of them spent thousands of dollars that summer trying multiple different of these crowdsourcing websites. And all of them called me at the end of the year and said, we just blew way too much money. We totally understand now and we want to work with you.
I think something in there that a lot of people would overlook that you said quite brilliantly, because this is what you do and you're a pro, is you won't build a relationship with this person, right? Like, you would maybe even be hard to get back a hold of that person or to find them again if you're going for one of the lower tiers and, you know, you're working with somebody that's, you know, in the Philippines or whatnot, a design pickle type situation. But see, this is where it gets interesting, though, because people want to sometimes shop for value and sometimes they want to shop for quality. And you're kind of in there in the middle being like, well, look, I'm not, if that's what you want to spend, that's what you want to spend. But of course, you're going to defend your own business. But the analogy I used to use back in the day, because what we used to have to fight off of were there were design competitions, you know, like design competitions seem like they've kind of not completely gone away, but I think enough people have like poo-pooed them that people now have a little sense of like, oh, we probably shouldn't do that. It's kind of insulting. And I used to get angry and just be like, why does my profession, why am I a prize fighter? You know what I mean? Like, why do I have to go out and like fight for my living? And I always broke it down this way, Jeremy. You know, the person you're talking to in accounting that goes, oh, you haven't gotten that second check yet? Oh, that's so weird. You haven't gotten paid yet. Let me go over and talk to Barbara and see where that second check is. I always would tell my wife, Beth, whose name is not Becky. I would say, not Becky. Could you imagine if this woman that I'm talking to, if her automatic deposit didn't show up this Friday, like if she didn't get paid this Friday, she would lose it. You know, these are people that get paid in routines all the time. And then when it's our turn to get paid, they're like, well, where's the money at? And so when you look at something like Fiverr, it's just once again, like diluting down the respect for the creative arts. That's why when I saw your website, I thought, well, this is somebody who's obviously, I think your website looks like these times. It looks like the 2020s of where you have to really be willing to give education to clients. You have to be willing to spell it out. You have to make it easy for people to shop, because I think what you're doing is you're showing value, because there is so many people right now devaluing design. And I'm really curious where all of this goes, you know, for the 10-year-olds that are around today. You know, every lawyer, every doctor in the future will have had an iPad their whole life and know how to do some sort of fundamental basics of graphic design. So it's going to be very interesting to see where this field goes, as the software can fake so much of the funk. And I see that, like, right now, folks like you guys are having to fight like the lower end Fiverr. It's just going to be interesting to see how technology keeps pressing on us. Cause if you go to, you know, Adobe Max, you see them constantly pushing the algorithms and the augmented reality and the virtual reality, all of these things, to like almost put an art style into a machine, upload it, and then it can just be produced subconsciously by a computer. So it's going to be interesting to see what that next battle is. But I'm glad that you shared that with me, because I'm removed from the front lines, but I just see Fiverr getting bigger and bigger, and I'm starting to hear more and more people, like, you know, YouTubers will be like, oh, I hope you guys like our new animation to our videos. We went over to Fiverr, guys. It's really affordable. We only paid like a couple $100 for this. And then I look at the animation, I go, that's like $5,000 worth of work that they paid $200 for.
Well, it honestly hasn't impacted me that much, because like I said, I get the people that went that route 5 years ago, 4 years ago.
Right.
And what they're ready now to do is tell their authentic story.
Right.
And so they didn't get an opportunity to do that the first time around, and now they're ready to do it. And I think part of it is they also have, over these last 5 years, they've garnered enough confidence that they can quit their job. They've saved up enough money to be able to do this. Their spouse is going to leave their job with them, and they're going to go full tilt into this. And it's something they're so proud of.
Yeah.
And when someone has something they're that proud of, you know, a crowdsourced logo just doesn't, it just doesn't hack it. So that's the thing that I love, is starting with this story first, branding, and just helping people understand that their brand identity is more than a logo. So, you know, and I'll tell you the thing that when somebody asks me, and I get this question a lot, like, why shouldn't I go with Fiverr? I will kind of change the conversation a little bit and say, tell me about your products. Tell me about your cupcakes. Why do you think Columbus, Ohio needs another cupcake bakery? And if their answer is, well, you know, my mom tells me, or my aunts and uncles tell me I bake the best cupcake in the world, then my typical response is, well, but but why does Columbus, Ohio need another one of you? Like, right. what is it? What's right. your unique selling proposition? What should put you on the map? And if they can't answer that, I'll usually tell them, listen, don't waste your money on Fiverr. Go to Google Fonts, type your name up in a font that you think works well. That's your logo for right now. Now, make the best product you can, take it to farmers markets, get it in front of people, and find out why your cupcakes are the best cupcakes on the planet, and listen to what people have to say.
Yeah.
Change the recipe. Start creating something that people genuinely want. And then 2 years from now or a year from now, when you figured that out and you're like, I am going to be the only cupcake in Ohio that X, Y, and Z. Now let's talk about it. Let's talk about your unique journey to getting to this point, and let's inject that into a brand identity. So I have a lot of people that'll say, man, I had my shoulders up at my ears, tense like crazy about trying to pick a logo. And I'm like, just type your name for right now. You don't have anything to wrap a brand around yet.
You're right. So you don't have any brand equity yet, right?
Yeah. You have no brand equity.
Yeah.
You can't tell a unique story yet.
And that's why I love that in your three-step process where you take, you know, a big thing that we all do, and a lot of it we do sort of subconsciously because it's how our mind works, where I, you know, we're different than the rest of professional societies, how we can, you know, verbalize the visual abstract. You tell everybody that it starts with story. And I completely agree with you. Like, you should always be in branding and design telling a story and figuring out, you know, is it a story of strength, courage? Is it a story of emotion? Is it a story of, you know, being vulnerable? And you're absolutely right.
Resilience.
Like, whatever. Yeah, resilient, whatever it is, whatever best fits that story. But you're absolutely right. You know, brother-in-law wants to start a new business. And you're like, look, just type it out, go with it for a little while, and then let it evolve into what it needs to be. Because you're right, Jeremy, like every business that's worth its while, that goes the distance, it gets that story behind it. Oh, well, they're the best in Columbus, Ohio because of this. They made the Ohio cake, right? And it's now like a treasure, and everybody loves it because it's the Ohio style of cupcakes, icing on the bottom. Who would have ever thought of it? But you're right. You have to live a little bit. And, you know, we talk about the Nike swoosh, you know, because it's just one of the most identifiable brands ever. But I always like to remind people, like, it was a check mark before it came the swoosh. And a lot of culture, a lot of pop culture, a lot of athletes, a lot of musicians, a lot of people put their lives and their sweat equity and their story into Nike. And then it became the swoosh. And then it became a world classic. But a lot of people want to see swoosh right out of the gate. And it's like, no, man, you got to start with the check mark and work your way up to the swoosh. You don't get there out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, just do it. Like what Michael Jordan. I mean, you just look at all of the different, you know, the people, and like you said, the sweat and the personalities and everything that goes behind Nike to make them who they are.
Right, right. And that doesn't happen overnight. That takes, that's a story that you have to build, and you're lucky if you can build one that's great. So part two is you help get people up to speed. After you've listened to them, after you've heard what their story is, now you try to, and I love that you say get up to speed, because when you look at your website of the before and after, that is totally getting people up to speed, right? That is taking a business that has now found itself to a couple of years of existing. It's got a customer base. It's got annual revenue. And that is exactly what you've just talked about. Like, a lot of those logos are great to get you out of the gate, but you help bring them up to speed, and you're building them something that, like with the coffee roastery, the nut with the coffee bean inside of it that you and Becky made together, that is getting that company up to speed, because that is the type of mark that can be put on anything. Anything that comes that company's way, that mark is ready to go. Whether it's the little bitty icon on a mobile phone or a wrap on their delivery van, you've got them dialed in. And so I love that up to speed, because your before and after clearly illustrates that you're capable of getting people to where they need to go.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. It's nice to hear someone say that. That's really kind.
Well, I just think you guys have done an excellent job on really solving what it means to be a working class family-based design company and a working class community, right? And you're not in LA. You're not pretending to be in New York City. You're not Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, you're not doing that type of thing. And I get it. I've been in the market that you're in, and I understand that a lot of people listening to the show, you know, It's great to listen to Benny Gold when he comes on. Benny Gold can tell you a great story, but Benny Gold's story and his path isn't applicable to everyone. It's not applicable to the guy. And randomly, this is what I always say when I'm talking about the show. I always want the guy in Ohio to be able to relate because I'm from Kentucky. Ohio to me is like a combination of, it's not the East Coast, it's not the South, it's not the West. Like, it really is the heartland, right? I mean, it's just like the conduit where so many different things come through. And so I always tell people when I'm trying to design shows for the podcast, I'm like, yeah, but I want the guy in Dayton, Ohio that has two kids that doesn't get to hang out with his friends anymore. I want him to put on the podcast and feel like he's with his buds. And so I really understand the market that you're at. And I think that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people talk to you about your visual design and how you put things together. And I'm going to pivot over that in a moment. But when I bring somebody on after talking to hundreds of creatives, I'm like, what can this person offer that the rest haven't? And the way that you guys have been able to take the working class website and break it down for working class businesses, I think that's your greatest strength.
I appreciate that.
Hey, friends, I hope you enjoyed part one of today's conversation with Jeremy Slagle over at SlagleDesign.com. I would like to apologize to his wife for calling her my wife's name, but I read the notes and, you know, he worked on a book with somebody and I just got excited and said, oh, cool, another thing that we have in common. But I hope you're enjoying this conversation. I hope that you go over and look at the website and, you know, don't just copy what the Slagles have been able to do, but really think about how can you be a better partner to not only the clients you have now, but to that next client, right? That is walking into your website. They have heard from a friend or saw your post over on Instagram. They think potentially you are the one to hire for their next campaign or their next brand or the next business they're building, but they just don't know yet. And I really feel like the script for success, walking people through the creative process, showing them before and afters are three really quick, fundamentally easy ways to show people how this works, and more specifically, how all this works when working with you. This is a phenomenal conversation. I really hope you're enjoying it. And I appreciate Jeremy for like, I'm sure there's so much more that he wanted to talk about. And we get into a lot of it in part two. He's really successful when he gets into the world of illustration and creating Kickstarters. But I just thought, out of all the things that I had seen after doing hundreds of these interviews, the way that that website created a immediate relationship with potential clients, I found that to be such a strong point and such a great lesson for other people to kind of walk through and look at. And look, man, I know we all hate working on our own websites, right? We just want to build stuff, make rad shit, and then the website's like, oh, I have to do that now. Where do I find the extra bandwidth? I'm tired. I'm raising a new family. Spring's coming. I got stuff to do around the house. I want to go work on my passion project after being everything to all my clients all the time. But what they were able to discover, it doesn't take a ton of work. And once you get a good template going and you can quickly update these sections, I don't see how it doesn't create a positivity in the way that you work for other clients and how you acquire future ones to come. So much more great conversation in part two, and it's all made possible by members of the Circle of Trust. Head over to AID.network if you enjoy what you're hearing, and I promise you, you become a member, I deliver 200 episodes to you each and every year. And this year, I'm making a really, really like bold attempt after coming out of the pandemic, after last year kind of really relying on a lot of our regulars to kind of get us through a weird zone. I'm going so hard to try to find as many new people, as many new perspectives, as many new voices as I can, because I feel like this is the year where everybody is rebooting the system. And there's just something that is so inspiring about getting a different set of eyes on your future, which you are writing right now as the world is getting back to normal. It's such an abnormal time to take advantage of it all. And hopefully you can take advantage of that with some of these conversations. Many more like today's, I'd say over 1,300 or so available for you at AID.network, which is where part two begins right now for members of the Circle of Trust.
There's a lot to aspire to here. I know a lot of people aspire to have that big client or have that, you know, LA job or New York job. And that's fine. That's it. It all comes down to what your goals and what your values and where you see yourself going. But There's a lot to aspire to by living in the Midwest.
Sure. Like,
there's a lot going on here. I mean, Ohio is agriculture country. I mean, yeah. We have some of the coolest stuff. The buy local scene has put a lot of people on the map out of Ohio. Jenny's Britton from Jenny's Ice Creams is based right here out of Columbus, Ohio. And she's going gangbusters right now. And there's a lot of cool stuff happening here. I'm getting ready to work with a local creamery that does organic milk. And I couldn't be more excited about the That's project. Great. I'm super excited about it.
That's great. And the thing about where you live too, is that it's a perfect combination of enough income and enough wealth for people to be able to do interesting things, but enough affordability for people to be able to take that adventure. To whereas, you know, if you're doing coastal living, a lot of people are really, really priced out. So it becomes the story of the haves and the have-nots. But I mean, no, I really believe in that area that you're from. And I remember a lot of pitfalls, professional pitfalls, because every market has its own, you know, ups and downs, right? Like there's a lot of great things about living in LA. There's a lot of bad things about living in LA. And there's a lot of great things about living in the Midwest. And there's a lot of things that I didn't enjoy, but I think that your website perfectly kind of captures what you have to be willing to do to keep landing clients at that level. And then just to break up so we don't give people a half thought, the third part of your process is equip people for the long haul. And I think where that is really, really smart is that you're explaining to people out of the gate, like, hey, it's not just one and done. It's let's build a relationship. And I think that, you know, that's really important for the market that you're in, because as these smaller businesses grow and they go to 2 locations to 20 locations, you know, you want to give them the type of art to let them go there, but also forge the type of relationship where, like, the Slagles are such good folks. They take care of us. We got another thing on the horizon. It's time to go back to our design team. And I love that idea of almost being in-house, but not, right? Like, they can forge a relationship with you. They can get to know you guys, know your creative style, feel comfortable with you, but they don't have to pay you when they're not using you, right? And that's a really great asset for a business that's scaling. They're like, we don't need an in-house people. We have the Slagles. We give them, you know, $10,000, $20,000 a year, and then they just disappear when we don't need this shit. And it's a perfect relationship.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, the agency model is great for people that can afford it.
Right.
You know, I don't have a writer and strategist. I don't have an animator. I don't have a developer. I don't have any of that on staff. But if a client needs that and they're adamant about WordPress because their website's currently on WordPress, then I have amazing people that I can bring to the table to work on that project. There's no reason for them to be paying me for the overhead to hire a bunch of people, to be paying paychecks for a bunch of people that they're not using.
Right. And you break down the process, you tell them what to expect. And I can also see how the before and after would really get them thinking, reading those steps, realizing, oh, this is a very friendly place to go to. Like, we're not going to be treated like dum-dums because we don't understand the art world or what design means. You might shock them a little bit with the sticker price, because there is such a new bottom entry level that exists now. But I think you guys have done a really good job of showing them, hey, you get what you pay for. And Jeremy, my favorite thing, you know, back in the early 2000s when I was bidding on logo artwork, because people always be like, so what's a logo cost? And I would always smile and be like, what's a house cost? We could go buy a house today for $30,000, or we could go buy a house for $30 million. What kind of home do you need? You know, like, it can literally be whatever you want to spend it on. And then people be like, well, what's the difference between the big one and the little one? I'm like, well, let's get into it. Like, a really expensive logo is going to be so custom fit, custom illustration, custom fonts, like a lot of exploration to get you where you want. But the bottom basic bitch is just like, here's a font. And it says your name, and it was $300. Enjoy.
Right. Yeah. I use a similar illustration, but I often talk about calling a travel agent and saying, how much does a vacation cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, do you want to go to Disney for a day, or do you want to do the 7-day Disney cruise and you know, and then hit Magic Kingdom and get park hoppers for the whole family after that? And, you know, there's so many different, you know, do you plan on flying there? You want to drive there?
Like, sure.
And what I like about that illustration is that anyone who's good at vacation planning or whatever can work with you at pretty much any level. you know, or at some point you go, you know, it's just really not worth working with me on this. Just go, you know, go to a travel website and just buy yourself a ticket.
100%. At that
point, it just makes sense.
I got good at realizing the people that in the conversation, you could just say, you know, like maybe, you know, and maybe this is the way that you should go. And I think that it shows your intent when you're like, I know I'm not the right person for you, but let me guide you to what I think that is mm-hmm. right for you, you know? And like, I even had times when somebody come to me with something like, you know, I'm going to hand you over one of my interns. You're going to save a bundle of money. He's eager to learn. And if it makes you feel any better, like I will probably like, you know, eyeball it before it goes out the door just to make sure, you know, cause I could just, they weren't in our price range. And you know, the last thing you want to do is talk somebody into working with you and like oversell it, because then Absolutely. It's such a liability the whole way through. So one of the things that Beth and I did, who I like her nickname at home is Not Becky. What we did was we focused over to working on our own projects. We found a lot of fulfillment out of doing the gig posters for the bands. And since we owned our own silkscreen shop, we ended up making lots of art prints. And we said, oh, it's even more fun when there's not a band involved. And so we traveled around doing art festivals, music festivals, and all that stuff, selling our own products, selling stuff online. And it was really, really fun. I know that you do primarily client stuff, but you guys have a passion for children's books, illustration. You have a subject matter that you like to work on. And with both of your books, you were able to quickly overfund them through Kickstarter. Their first book mm-hmm. was called Chin Up Chinchilla, and then they've just followed it up with Hip Hooray Hippo. And both of the books deal with teaching empathy to children, but also in an interesting way, there's like a questionnaire afterwards. Not a questionnaire, that sounds like you're marketing your children, but there's a couple of like topics where after you read the book with your kid, you can actually like hang out and ask the kid questions and sort of like, hey, dum-dum, did you learn anything, or did we both just waste our time for the last 20 minutes?
Yeah. And so this is where Beth comes back in, actually.
Okay.
So the author for this book is Beth Stafford, who is married to Ben Stafford, who's one of my favorite illustrators and a good friend of mine, who lives about an hour and a half from here.
Okay.
And we ended up working together on these projects, put them up on Kickstarter. I always wanted to do a illustrated children's book. I struggled with reading when I was younger, and I remember my mom reading books to me, and I just was always so drawn in by the illustrations. And Beth just always wanted to write a children's book. So I was like, well, let's do this. So yeah, the answers, the questions at the end, I've had multiple parents tell me that like they ask their kids and have discussions with their kids about it. And sometimes they realize, oh my gosh, I needed to read this book as much for me as I did for my kids.
Well, that's right. Kids are right. Like, I mean, I don't have kids, but from what I see, kids teach us so much about ourselves and who we are as yep. people, because kids, one, they don't bullshit you up until a certain age. Like they call it the way that they see it. They like yep. see straight through, and they question everything, which then in turns makes you go, I don't know, why does daddy get mad when he washes dishes? You know what I mean? Like they're always like checking everything.
Yep. Yep. They keep us humble.
So the,
for sure.
So the illustration work in both of these books, you're the primary illustrator on these?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
So in another world, you could have just totally did illustration all the time and not have to work on all the branding and problem solving for small to mid-sized businesses.
Well, it's funny you say that, because, last March, this crazy thing happened. I don't know if you're aware of it in this country, but all of a sudden everything shut down. It was pretty crazy.
Are you kidding me? I live in California. We were the most shut down there ever was.
So I was working on probably four or five restaurants at the time.
Okay.
And the you know, all of a sudden restaurants are closed.
Yeah.
Like overnight.
Yeah.
Restaurants are closed. So I sent an email out to the restaurants that I work with. And I said, listen, you guys have much bigger issues to work with. And talking with some of them, they were trying to figure out what do we do with the extra food? They were literally bagging their food into care packages to send home with their cooks, with their waiters, with everyone, hoping this was going to be, you know, a temporary thing, and saying like, the only thing we can do for you right now is send you home with food.
Right.
And so I said, you know, as far as invoices go, if there's outstanding invoices on any of our projects, or if we're in the process on any of these, just let that, just remove it from your concerns.
Yeah.
Like, don't let me be any, add anything to this. If you guys reopen, when you reopen, if we want to hop back on that project eventually, and you guys are up to speed and being able to do it, we'll just talk about it then. If you need me to break it into all sorts of little tiny, you know, mm-hmm. and extend the payments out forever, just don't worry about it right now.